This evening's speaker is Shanti Saul. Shanti has practiced Vipassana since the mid-1970s. She has become a teacher under the influence, under the guidance of Ruth Dennison in the Burmese lineage of U Ban Khin. Since 1990, her practice efforts have been devoted to intensive retreat practice and work meditation in the form of acting as a head cook at Vipassana retreats. She currently resides in Sevastopol.
Okay. I see a few. I see a few people that I've seen before. Many of you I haven't. I don't know if there's any of you that are new to IMC. Is there anyone that's their first night here? Welcome, welcome. Ah, great. Do you know where you are? Do you know what this place is? A little bit of meditation, mindfulness-based meditation is what Vipassana is being present with what is, no matter what it is, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, to simply come to be able to be in awareness, embodying or embracing all that is. So that's a little bit of what it is. And you'll hear a little bit through my voice tonight and through many other voices, I'm sure. I'd like to leave a little bit of time at the end for questions and for comments and for what other folks have going on for them. So we'll do that. So one thing that Maureen mentioned is that there's a class on death and dying or something going on around that. And I moved my mother into my house at the beginning of August last year, so it's almost a full year. And she's now very deep into the dying process. She's 8 days now without food and water, and we keep thinking, okay, this is probably the last day. So just for the last few days, we've actually kind of thought that. And we had a brother that died of AIDS in 88, and his birthday was actually yesterday. So we thought, okay, well, maybe she'll die on his birthday because they were quite close, and that was a significant date. So who knows? And that's a lot of what our life is. Who knows? Who knows what this day will be? Who knows what this life will be, will bring to us? And she's a great teacher for me. One thing that keeps popping up amongst many is about view. In this tradition, there's the Four Noble Truths, and within the Four Noble Truths, in the fourth Noble Truth, there's the Eightfold Path within that. And the very first one, they're all about view on this fourth. And the first one is about right view or right understanding. And it's not right as opposed to wrong. It is right as in what's truthful. And I want to emphasize the word full. So it's what's the truth in a full, complete way. So it's not just one simple, this is the way it is. It's, oh, that sounds much better. Thank you. It's about being open to all possibilities in this view. So some of it is just in the simple of thinking, okay, well, maybe she's going to die because of this and that, or at this particular time, or, you know, what's going on with her health and all of these things. And she's actually 90 years old. And February 2nd, she turned 90. In the middle of April, she had a partial stroke. It affected her left side of her body. And so at the age of 90, imagine a 90-year-old, then having to relearn how to move her body because her left side, though it wasn't complete, was very limited in what it could do. She had to retrain her brain to move that part of her body. She knew some words, a lot of words actually, because it was affecting the left side rather than the right. But there were sometimes there was a word where she just wouldn't get it, and so I would need to find a word that she understood and then go from there, and then me being the main caretaker then pass it on to the other characters so that we'd use the same words so that she wouldn't have to work this out with every single person that she was with. But so opening up to new possibilities, looking in new ways, and being able to move from that place again and again. And she would have a setback with these little mini strokes called TIAs. And then she'd be 2 or 3 days, and then she'd have to start over again and build up from where she was before it. And then another one and start over again. And she continued to do this for about 2.5 months until she had her last stroke over Memorial Weekend, where she then progressed to a state where she could no longer move very much at all, and to now near dying. But all these, each time she brought this freshness to this day of life. It's amazing to me. And not always in a way of thinking she could get through it, but somehow meeting each day. And some days not so pleasantly, and some days wanting it to be her last. But more than not, just wanting to see how she could be present for that, in what ways, what she could eat affected her swallowing. So sometimes she could eat more than other times. So what she wanted and what she could eat sometimes didn't match. This is true, like with so many of experiences that we have, that we want it and think it should be in a certain way. And we find ourselves, I know I find myself getting frustrated when things don't go the way I think it ought to go. And just to have that be over and over and over, and then reopening. So in this way, this view or this way of understanding is coming to all possibilities and saying, okay, how can I meet this moment? What do I have? What can I understand in this? What is there to understand in this? Pause for for this moment. Okay. Those things happen more and more more and more these days. One of the books I brought with me is from the 70s. It was from before my days of Vipassana meditation, but I was doing a little guided meditation at the time, and Barry Stevens, who I think she was born in 1902 or 03, was a part of this group. Where at 16 years old, she left school, and she just couldn't be with these things that she didn't feel were true to her spirit and true to her experiences. So she went off and met various people, one of them being Carl Rogers, and the person-to-person and the kind of I'm okay, you're okay genre, and Fitzpearls, worked with the Gestalt, and Krishnamurti in the spiritual realm. So she comes from all of these kind of eclectic knowledge that she's gathered. And the title of this book is burst out laughing. And one of the things my mother said to me in the last few months is that I need to laugh more. And so some of these things are just kind of beliefs. And then when I see, she kind of puts these beliefs forward and then puts them in a way, or views, puts them in a way where it's kind of absurd, you know, to think such a thing. And so then in that way it helps lighten me up. And
what's the author's name?
Barry Stevens, in a way that, well, let me just read. It's kind of humorous in that. So she's talking about views, concepts. It seems to me that my mind did a skid from drinking and drugs and religion and concepts, which she was a large part of. And yet, what I now see or understand about people and concepts, I am totally satisfied, at peace in the world, at peace with myself. And a friend says, make haste slowly. My born and raised again Irish grandmother used to say this. This is from Barry. And then from a quote from Jim Klee, who sometimes she quotes famous people and other times she quotes regular people, and she doesn't say who's who, and which is another kind of wonderful way of hers. And so I don't always know who she's referring to. So this person is Jim Klee. When I hurry, it takes longer. And still I am amazed that what works in the short run, like doing the dishes or walking to school, works also in the long run, like writing a book, that she's writing this book. I know that I shouldn't be surprised, but I am. Everything's made up of moments, and the only difference between short and long is more moments. So this sense of sometimes when we move fast, things actually take longer. So just finding that in myself when I'm rushing and rushing and rushing, it's like, oh, I need to slow down so that I can get there as soon as I need to get there, kind of thing. And so this is about a lot about view, concepts, beliefs. On and in this, what it does is it helps these examples kind of help us see other ways of seeing. So this is her idea on procrastination, or her view that helped open up her view on what procrastination is. Until yesterday, I would have said that I don't have any procrastination. I called a friend to help me through the final stages of this book. By talking to him, he gets something clear in me, and I move. I don't know how he does this. I think he doesn't know either. But at the end of a fairly brief conversation, I was able to start work again without tying myself into knots. This time he listened to my plight and said that he envied me, that he is a procrastinator, while I stay with things and get them done. I went back to work on the business of making a book, the tedious part, the mechanical part of arranging the pages and then making the arrangements consistent throughout three copies and so on. I can give all this because that makes that, wait a minute. I can give all the becauses that make this difficult. A big one is that I want to get on with regeneration. As I went on working, I noticed how and what I put off in order to get the job done. When I go hungry, I put off eating. When I need to go to the bathroom, I put that off. My eyes are tired and I don't rest or exercise. I put that off too. My body needs to stretch, and I hold it tightly in a cramped position. Putting off, putting off, putting off. Suddenly, I realized what I was doing. I went to the phone and called my friend. I am a procrastinator. It's the other side of the coin. So it's a different way of looking at what we think of as procrastination. So another part of the right view or right understanding has to do with our heart mind. In Buddhism, we talk about our mind actually living in the heart. In the word that's used, it's actually meant coming from the heart. So it's not an intellectual understanding; it's a full body understanding. So that's part of right view, is having an open heart or an open mind, open view. And that it's a process. It's not, this is the way it is, and that's it. It continues along the way. So we can have this open heart mind in many different ways. All of us have experienced this, and sometimes for brief moments and sometimes for longer periods in our lives. We experience it in brief moments, perhaps, when we're all open and accepting of the situation, and we don't think about it. We might just let the person who seems kind of agitated behind us go ahead of us in line so that they can go to wherever they need to be. So it just in just this way, we open up and see that, well, there's more than just me standing in this line, and that perhaps, I can step aside in this sense. Or in another simple way of just asking someone how they're doing today. You know? So including opening up our view to not just the view within this body, but of other, including other beings, other living beings in our surroundings. And not just in the surroundings of those that are close to us, but those that we don't know, or maybe even those that we may not care for. So in this way, inclusion, including. Sometimes a very simple one that I do sometimes is with in rush hour traffic, just simply allowing others to go ahead of me. In that view, it's not just that I'm doing for someone else. That's one part of the view. But seeing the larger picture is perhaps if this person stays behind me in an agitated state, they may do something that is careless, that may cause harm to themselves or other beings around, zipping in and out of traffic or whatever. So thinking of a larger and yet larger and yet larger way. So in this way, we're not holding on to, well, they shouldn't be driving this way, you know, or what's going on for them? Who knows what's going on for them? You know, they might be needing to get to a child that's left in a situation where she or he needs to be cared for, or they might be needing to go to another situation to take care of something else. We have no idea. And then in another way, opening this heart mind for brief moments and then for larger times. Me with my mother, for example, in this time it's in some ways much more natural for my heart to be open in and out of with my mother's care and with my sisters who are actually right there now with her, extending beyond this place here and extending for long periods of time. So coming here, I thought about changing of not coming tonight. I thought about, which would have been okay too, someone else would have come. But I thought, you know, I can do this. I'm in a clear place with my mother. She will die when she's ready to die. I may be there and I may not be there. So my condition doesn't have to, I don't have to impose my condition or my state upon her in that way. And also, in a sense, I was driving across the bridge from San Francisco. I live about 2.5 hours north of here. And across the bridge, I had a very strong sense of my mother's presence and a smile, because near the end, she was, before I moved her into my house, she was very cooped up in her house. She got to where she didn't see very many people, didn't go out. And then when she came to me, she became, once she adjusted after the first couple of months, got to where she really enjoyed going out on drives. And so I just envisioned her with me in the car. And she had this great big smile as we were going over the Golden Gate Bridge. And she saw this great view of San Francisco, and it was quite clear also. So of just this smile of, oh, here, Mom, share this moment with me. Who knows? Of space and time, where it is. So opening up to the possibilities, not that it's true, not that it's not true, we just don't know. Sometimes we do know, but leaving that open. Just in Buddhism, there's the belief that reincarnation is part of the deal, so to speak. You know, we come back again and again and again until we have nothing left to hold on to, so that we can let go of anything and everything. And then also in that, for many people, believing in the path of the Bodhisattva, until all beings are free from suffering, we keep coming back to care until all beings are free from suffering. I lost track of my thought. Reincarnation. So with this thought of this belief of Buddha, a long time ago, some believed that reincarnation, which is true today, I'm sure, some believe in reincarnation and some don't. And the view more was that it's not that you believe or that you don't believe, but that you're open to the possibility that it may be true. So you didn't have to have a for sure, oh yeah, I know I had many past lives because of this or that, or so and so told me this, and I believe, you know, this happened with Tibetan nuns and monks, etc. But it's just being open to, well, maybe it is and maybe not. Who knows? So in that way, being open. So that being another part of this right view. Another part is that we're not alone. And all of what I've said kind of points to that anyway, that we're not alone, that, you know, there are many people, and not just even people, animals, plants, all many living beings that we share this planet with and that we share the universe with. And that view holds a place in this. And so in that way, the the view on anatta, or on the self, on the selfless, a lot of people think of anatta or the selfless as not having a self. And it's not so much that it's not having a self, but it's that we're not a separate entity, that we're not a separate self, and that we're all connected. So both are true, and beyond this is true. So even with such views on anatta, we can think of selflessness, but even that can be opened up. It's like, what does that mean? How do I experience it? And then how can I further experience it? So that's a lot of what this right view is about, is how can I open up more? How can I experience this more fully? And then when we find ourselves rigid or stuck, which we well do, include that as well. This also is true, that I do have this nature that is stuck or that is rigid or that does believe this. Even though I don't think it's true, I still believe it, or I still might act on it. And sometimes it's a bodily thing, and sometimes it's an intellectual idea of things that can get in our way. So continuing to open up, one example on this in our system with the courts is, many of you have probably been listening to the news, and the news around Troy Anthony Davis being on death row and just getting an extension. But even though the evidence is pointing that he's innocent, because the law is saying this is the way it is and we have to follow this law because this law is here, that's a stuck view. So being able to see with, I'm forgetting his sister's name, Angela. Anyway, that's worked with this for so long, seeing how she's embraced this and embodied it, and says, "See, this is the problem, or this is part of the problem." And so she's not saying this shouldn't be. She's saying this is true, and can we change this? Can we open to this, and can we change this? And finally, through this, perhaps there will be a change, and perhaps there can be more and more changes. But so that's place inside ourselves that we see that's stuck. We also need to nurture and see how it manifests in our life, so that we can see whether it's necessary or not, or whether we want to open to that and choose to shift it, and in what ways. And in how is it not true? How is it not working for us? So that then we can make that shift from a place of wisdom. So it takes an open, loving heart, and then it takes this discernment and this wisdom to then come and make shifts like that in our personal lives, in our societal lives, in our lives within our family groups, and larger and larger. I think of that with my sisters. I have myself and two sisters that are living close to where my mother is, or my house. They live close to me. And we've had to look at things in new ways also. My mother is not somebody that used to take medication. She didn't want to have anything, not even an aspirin. She didn't want to go to a doctor. She wouldn't go. And then with this stroke, everything changed. It was fine to go to the doctor. It was fine to have medication. And we kept looking at each other and saying, well, but, you know, when the nurse would say, well, there's this medicine and this medicine, and we would look at each other, but my mother doesn't want any medicine. But then when they would ask my mother, she would say yes. So we would say, oh, right, that was then, this is now. And wisely so. And yet then there's this other part of her that from this place of not accepting any and every medication, gratefully, she didn't have very many. So it didn't take that long to find what medications would work, you know, and find out where the balance was, and come back to those balances sooner. Because so it took It took in consideration the view that was before and the new view and put them together for the whole of what could work. So I've also spoken a little bit to, in the beginning especially, a little bit of our intuitive or going beyond what our beliefs are. And Ajahn Sumedho speaks to that in his book on intuitive awareness. So in this way, it's not just right view or right understanding, but a lot of what he's saying is in that as well. And the other piece I wanted to say about this right view, it's the first of eight in the fourth noble truth, the first one being that suffering does exist in this world. And then there's causes for the suffering. And the third one being that there's an end to the suffering. And so this fourth one is the path to the end of suffering. And so the right view is first. The second one is right thought. So the two can work together. When you have a view, you can check it or balance it with thought. You know, you can have a thought and look and check it with your view, or vice versa. And the other part about right view is it circles back around a right understanding. I like all the way after you go through the others through the eight, you come back to right understanding yet again, and then it becomes deeper. So it's not one through eight and then you're done. It is yet another layer and another layer and another layer. So in his book on intuitive awareness, he speaks about the part that I spoke to about concepts and views, and in this way he's combining wisdom and love or embracing. That's what he says. As we notice the world that we live in, the environment, the way that it is, we find that it leads towards just recognizing the impermanent nature of our conscious experience. How things rise and pass away, or as he says, rise and cease, begin and end. This is knowing the world. Not judging the world according to some standard, but seeing the world, seeing that the world is like this. It is sensitive. So opening to the ever-changing nature. So right view is also then being willing, once we have a view, to shift it, like we did with the medicines and other things. And including love in this. And he talks about it in a way of awakening. I realized that I'm quite willing to take what life presents and to learn from it. That's the challenge. Seeing this as an opportunity that we have as human beings, as conscious beings, awakening to that. Okay. Now the teachings of the Lord Buddha are teachings pointing to this. They're to awaken you rather than condition you. So in that way, being willing to shift. To use this is to develop and to encourage the awakened awareness, mindfulness, and intuition. rather than fear. Sensitivity really opens to it, to be fully sensitive rather than trying to protect ourselves from endless possible pain or misfortune. So the other part of this, going beyond talking about right view, and yet there's a way that holding wisdom and love or metta is a way of being with views in this way. It's an embracing way, and that's what it also is about, is to embrace all aspects of our being, just the stuck places and the not so stuck, the things that we like, the things that we don't like, the things that we think shouldn't be there that still are there. So embracing those in a way so that we can choose wisely whether we want to be with this or not, or how we want to be with it. And one of my great teachings, Carol Wilson from IMS has been a teacher for me during longer retreats, 3-month retreats on the East Coast. And over and over again, I would hear this from her. And this is another piece of right view, as she'd say. Don't try and figure it out. Just don't try and figure it out. Because that's the part where we're on an intellectual level trying to figure the whole thing out of opening to being present. And that's just one sliver of the pie. So don't try to hold on to that one little piece of pie. Go for the whole thing. So when we let go and just abide in pure, unattached consciousness, that is also the experience of love, of unconditional love. Pure consciousness accepts everything. It is not a divisive function. It doesn't have preferences of any sort. It accepts everything and every condition for what it is, the good, the bad, the demons, anything. So when you begin to trust in it, the metta, or this loving kindness practice, comes alive. So a lot of us in Vipassana, we also practice loving kindness. Which I'd also like to do a little bit of in the last few minutes here. And so sometimes they're practiced separately, and sometimes they just naturally flow in and out of one another. When we have an open mind, the wisdom can come through in an intuitive way, or just in a spark. And when we have our hearts open, the wisdom will pop through. So when we're with deep wisdom, our heart just naturally opens as well. So that's the unconditioned. So a little bit more on metta that is here. If you really want to apply to this world, or to this word, metta, that which accepts, love which is unattached, which has no preferences, which accepts everything and sees everything as belonging, when you begin to trust in awareness, the conscious moment that is infinite, then everything belongs in it, whether it's through the senses from the outside or from the inside, the emotional or the physical, which becomes conscious. This sense of love, acceptance, non-judgment accepts everything that you are thinking, feeling, experiencing. It allows everything to be what is. So there's another way of a little bit of what said sometimes is when you sit, just sit. When you walk, just walk. That kind of thing. And then it goes beyond that, is when we're sitting, we're not just sitting. And when we're walking, we're not just walking. Everything is within that. So allowing ourselves to just sit and then experience all that we experience within that sit. The wanting to get up, the joy and the peace, the anger and the physical pain and the thousands of thoughts, the repetitious thoughts, the planning, the judging, the contentment, the whole thing. So, in this right view, nothing is left out. Everything is included. So on that, I'd like to open up for a few minutes of questions or comments or a little bit about what your practice is in this, with this. And then we'll do metta at the end. Yeah. Oh, thank you. So my mother's name is Viola, and thank you for asking, Viola Soul, because I want to dedicate the merit, and so at the very end I'll do that. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Joel. Just wanted to thank you for sharing your journey with us at a time that is very important for you and your family. My mother passed away in January, mm-hmm. and I lived out here, so I didn't have the honor of serving her in her last moments, although I was able to get back for her last breath. Mm-hmm. And that was important to me. There are so many ways to share in a death with somebody, and it seems real important yes. often to just be there and to be able to breathe with them. I was thinking while I was here that she was there when I took my first breath, and I was there when she took her last.
Yes.
So I just appreciate very much your taking this time to be with us and share this lesson with us.
Thank you. Yeah, it is a very special experience. I was also the death coach for my brother when he was dying of AIDS, and I was with him through that and leading him and guiding with meditation, which he asked for. And in my mother's way, she likes to sing, or she used to like to sing, so we played a lot of music, a lot of loving music to her, different songs that she liked. And so one of the ones she kept coming back to again and again was please release me, let me go. And she'd do that, please release me, let me go. And there's part of this line where it says I don't love you anymore, and we changed it together of so I can love again and I can live again. And so just in that way, just sharing these little things. Yeah. Also, just the last day or two, I've been playing the Dalai Lama's healing chant, and it's shifted her breathing quite a bit. Speaking of breathing. Yes.
You're referring to Dalai Lama.
Yes.
Is a Tibetan meditation or Vipassana meditation is different from Dalai Lama? And is the loving kindness that you're talking about and intuitiveness? When we go under meditation, we feel sleepy, but still sometimes we feel, oh, something is, you know, good will be happening next day or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that is, do you think that it's due to the meditation thing, that is, that our mind and body gets changed? Or our attitude changes?
Uh-huh. I want to answer the first part, but I'm not sure on the last part what you mean by that.
I mean to say, during our meditation,
yes,
we do have some type of guts feeling or some, about you referring to intuitiveness. So
intuition.
So during the Vipassana meditation, we are doing the Vipassana meditation here, right?
Yes.
And Dalai Lama meditation is something different. So I read a book on Dalai Lama.
Yes.
That was something different, and it is a Tibetan meditation thing.
Okay.
So, and also Kuan Yin method of meditation, that also refers to Buddhism, or is it same as Dalai Lama?
Uh-huh. Great questions. There's a lot of overlap in Buddhism. And Ajahn Sumedho, who's in this, is a Theravadan monk and teacher, and he speaks of metta too. The Tibetans, they have so many practices, for one thing. And this chant, I don't know much about this particular chant other than it's a healing chant. And so we played that music, and it was in Tibetan. So, and I don't understand the language, so I don't know that. But there's the four divine abodes, and metta is the foundation for these four divine abodes. And there's many Tibetan practices. There's Zen practices, the diamond. It's opening to the, oh boy, I'm not remembering. The diamond lotus. It's in all aspects. In this specific mindfulness practice, loving kindness is a different practice. Mindfulness practice is a wisdom practice, and loving kindness is a concentration practice. But they go together well, and like I said, one kind of weaves into the other, and they each kind of weave into each other through time and through practice. And in Buddhism, we operate with peace, yes, with non-harming, and it's referred to as the dove and the two wings of the dove. One of the wings being the wing of wisdom, and the other wing being the wing of loving kindness and compassion. And so all the Buddhist practices have them. Some more focus on one or another. Is that okay?
What about Kuan Yin method? Is it the same thing that you were talking about, loving kindness?
Kuan Yin is the goddess of compassion.
Okay.
And she has a number of names, whether it's China or Vietnam or a lot of Eastern countries. She's also considered a Buddha, a bodhisattva of compassion. Sorry, bodhisattva of compassion. So,
So you mean to say in Vietnam they practice Kuan Yin method in Vietnamese? Or is metta what you're talking about?
I'm sorry.
You were referring to Vietnamese thing that they practice this type of...
I can't say that one is set in one or another. There's loving kindness practice, compassion practice with Kuan Yin. There's loving practice, compassion practice, joy for others, equanimity practice. So I may not have the answer that. Yeah. I'll just say that I don't know. How's that? Because there's so many different.
Well, I was wondering if the Kuan Yin practice that he was referring to is something that Pema Chodron often talks about, or the thing of where you breathe in like the negative things. Tongue. Yeah, I was mixing those two up. Okay, so that's, I was trying to figure out if that was the same thing or not. Now, that clarifies that. But that practice, some people have, some of them have trouble with that one, you know, that thing of where you're supposed to breathe in the negative and then breathe out the positive.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered if you had any thoughts about that.
Yeah. jumping around, but that's okay. I have done a little bit of Tonglen practice. And it really depends on where you are and who it's with, like I said, this isn't just one or another. I've had experience with a friend. Actually, she was a partner of a friend, and we often got into conflict, and she was being very aggressive with me and, you know, insisting on this and this and this. And I saw myself getting tighter and tighter and tighter. And all of a sudden she said, "And you're supposed to be a Buddhist." And it was the most wonderful thing she could have said. Because then it was like, oh, right, okay. So I just let that energy in, and just the fire in her eyes, I just brought it in and breathed it in and out and in and out, until all of the anger no longer existed, and then love could come through. And that was just a natural, spontaneous thing that happened. I had recently done Tonglen practice, so it was fresh with me. But it's not, you know.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks.
So this right view or this understanding allows all potential and possibilities. When and as we need and can make use and can have access to. Yeah. Okay.
It's for the hearing assisted devices.
I'd like a better sense of this word, discernment.
Discernment?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So, wisdom. One of the words for wisdom includes discernment. My experience there with the Tonglen practice, when I did that, there was an amount of discernment that was involved, and yet there was another way of just intuitively coming forward. So I'm using this as an example. So discernment would wisely choose what is appropriate in a situation. So it takes some wisdom for the discernment to come through, to decide and to consider the whole. So it's It includes. It's like maybe having a full deck of cards and then knowing when to use which card. Is that discernment?
So it's kind of not a thinking, cognitive thing, but at some point an intuitive response based on.
Yes, and a response, exactly. Not a reaction, but a response. And coming from the wisdom of your practice, coming from the wisdom of the teachings that you have had throughout your life, so it would include Kuan Yin, it would include Pema Chodron's, it would include, you know, the Buddha's, it would include a lot, a third grade teacher, you know, all come through. One quick.
Do you have time? If not,
go ahead. We'll.
If you're talking about the right view, mm-hmm. I was wondering, like when you meditate and you try to concentrate in your breath, mm-hmm. and your thoughts come, and then you look at your thoughts and then you let them go.
Yeah.
Is that also the right view?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's an aspect of right view. It would be more considered right effort. Okay, because what you're doing is you're choosing to not go with something that might be harmful. I don't know the particular thoughts, but you know, are that aren't helpful. You have the understanding that. And you're making use of right effort.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, this is really quick because it's just flipped to 9. So we'll just very, very quickly sit for 1 minute, if that's okay. Okay. So this is sitting with ease. And loving kindness is a practice of ease. There's no extra effort. So breathing in and out of the heart, feeling the body and the support of your body and the earth underneath you. And from this place of the heart, just feeling a gentle love and kindness. I'll say a phrase and you can say it to yourself. May I care for myself with joy and ease. May I live in peace. May I live in harmony. Just feeling the love for yourself. And then from this place, stretching the love out towards all beings everywhere. And from this place of love, I'd like to dedicate the merit from all our wonderful efforts this evening through love and wisdom. May my mother pass along her journey with joy and ease, and may her next life be filled with happiness and peace. And in this way, may all beings have peace. May all beings care for one another. May all beings live in peace and care for one another. Thank you.